Have you both not watched Barbie Girl yet?
No, no. Not yet.
You both need to go and watch Barbie Girl. Dat, okay? I have woken up and I feel like I'm dealing with the Kens, okay? I'm awake now, right? It's not gonna happen.
Have you checked out Ryan Smoothlips? Is that what you're saying?
Just to let you know, we have no genitalia, okay?
So you have the DM down there. That's all he's got.
The dog was too active. It's worn away.
It's got a very abrasive tongue.
It's worse than sandpaper.
All right, he's coming collecting for his ice cream or his peanut butter. We don't know. All right.
Peanut butter ice cream.
Oh.
Ryan's got frosty balls. Here we are, back at the Grindstone. It is the Digitools in a Cruel World podcast, rising from the ashes, let's say, because we're finally back and recording a pod for what feels like months, could even be years or millennia, who knows. But it's great to be here. It's great to be back. We've got an interesting discussion to talk about, which we'll touch on shortly. Also got app news and all your favourite bits of winter and the usual format and gubbins that we get on with. Without further ado, let's have a quick word with Ryan, because I know he's been a little bit poorly. Mummy's little boy is feeling a little bit sorry for himself, but he's high on drugs, so let's see how he's doing.
I am a little bit lightheaded. As you can probably tell, I'm a bit nasally. I don't normally get ill, but when I do, it seems to hit me hard. But crack on, no rest for the wicked here.
Yeah, you did a good job pulling together the app news at last minute, as usual, Ryan. So that was all good. As a little soldier, you can keep trooping on, can't you?
Thanks, mate. And
Indy, how are things with you? What have you been up to? You've probably been on your hollies or doing something, traveling around the world, selling businesses, finally getting through due diligence. Who knows what you've been up to?
Yeah, my hollies and my jollies. I thought I would have had more of a break in this time, but it's been one marathon to the next, so that's great. But I did manage to take a couple of specialised retreats. I went camping in Hay-on-Wye and went to a big Russell Brand event. Controversial. Yes, it was. However, it was the inspiration I needed to quit alcohol. So I've now not drank anything since my birthday, which was over a month and a bit ago.
Amazing. And I think Ryan and I still owe you a present, but then I guess we probably still owe Ryan a present as well.
True.
We'll gloss over that quickly. And do you know that marathons have been rebranded as Snickers, don't you? Are you aware of that?
You are talking to someone who was raised in a sweet shop, darling. Okay. To this day, my daughter finds the most impressive thing that I have tried every single sweet and chocolate and ice cream that is known out there to all of mankind. Yes, I did. I tried everything.
Even the specialist dog ice cream. Have you tried that?
That's not my area of expertise. Why don't we ask Ryan?
Guys, leave me alone. I'm too poorly to be dragged into any more food and dog-based jokes, all right?
I only say that because I was on holiday in Cornwall the last couple of weeks, and the place that I stayed at was a dairy farm, and they had their own ice cream, and they made a specialist dog friendly ice cream, which was going down a treat.
So what are we doing today?
We are going to talk about price rises and price changes, because quite a few of the apps in the marketplace have announced changes to the pricing structure or price rises as a consequence of various things, which we'll get into. And as well, as is always the case, there's been quite a lot of pushback from the accountancy space and quite a few vocal critics of the price changes and the usual app news. And we've got a guest on a little bit later on as well.
Okay, let's do it.
So I'll kick off app news this episode. So we've had an interesting release from Fathom. They have integrated into QuickBooks Online and Xero, not for the first time, but into their budget area to bring departmental budgets, cost center budgets into Fathom from the Xero and QuickBooks Online systems directly, and now enabling you or the user to report against those budgets. So a weakness, a missing link in Fathom historically is the fact that you can look at companies overall, but when you wanted to go into tracking categories, cost center budgets, et cetera, you wouldn't be able to do that. So this has filled a little bit of a gap. You can't use the forecasting tool from a budget perspective, but you can now report against them. And it looks pretty interesting. We're starting to use this for a client who had a specific need and there wasn't anything in the marketplace that was filling that need suitably. And this release from Fathom has enabled that.
Yep, that's great. And I've got something a little bit more unusual, which is an announcement from Approval Max that they have integrated with Syn7 Core, which, for those of you not familiar, is the old Deere inventory stock management system. that since having acquired, oh gosh, 2-3 years ago now, this is quite an interesting development for the space, because you're managing approvals of accounts payable within operational systems like an inventory management system is always a bit of a challenge, as is the OCR side of things, which I don't think anyone's quite fixed yet. So what Approval Max have offered is, if you're familiar with the Dex or their other OCR integrations, very similar setup, in that as you raise purchase orders or purchase invoices on the system, they'll go through an approval workflow. And again, because you've got Approval Max, you've got all of the complexity and the various layers that you can build into there. Really fascinating implementation. And maybe some of the other players in the market will follow this up. Or maybe an interesting question to ask is why they've gone with the Syn7 core product and not the wider Syn7 product. I'm not familiar with it, so I don't know if that already has workflows in it, that maybe Unleashed will be looking to replicate this as well to some degree.
Yeah, this has filled a hole, or starting to fill a hole that we've talked about on the pod before, John, where that whole expense management area in inventory has been quite weak. And Approval Max, being probably the best approval tool out there in the app ecosystem, is expanding again and solving a problem. Something slightly different, QuickBooks Online has filled a hole that has been a massive bugbear of mine, especially as we provide software support at SB Digital. We get queries from clients on how do we do this, how do we do that inside QuickBooks? And my team would explain how to do it and how to get to it. And they'd find that actually what we're explaining looks completely different to a client, because QuickBooks Online has had a different navigation window for businesses and compared to accountants. So what we would see on the left-hand side looks different to what businesses see. And they've now finally aligned those into one navigation window, so we all are looking at the same thing. I didn't even realize this when I first started looking at working with QuickBooks Online. It was just a frustrating fallout from us providing our software support. So this makes things just so much easier for everyone.
Yeah, and something else related to QuickBooks, they've just announced that they're withdrawing their French product. That was announced fairly recently. And the expectation is that for all small business customers, as of the 31st of December 2023, books will be withdrawn over there. They've already pulled the marketplace and the developer app listings that's available through there. And it looks like it's going to be a challenging transition period, because they've said that effectively between the beginning of January and the end of March next year, users will have read-only access to their QuickBooks data, but won't be able to enter anything else. So you've got quite a sort of narrow window for transitioning away to something else. Yeah, that's a bit of a weird one to me, because I always thought the power of QuickBooks was that they were able to deliver these localized versions of their wider products. And that's one of the issues that we've seen with products like Xero, for example, or Preagent and others, not being able to localize their products to expand into that marketplace. Continental Europe is a massive opportunity for the cloud players, because although there are some localized products that are relatively good, products like Exact, for example, which has got quite a lot of presence in the Netherlands and the Low Country areas, and there's a few others which are up and coming, there's not anything that sort of is pan-European, and there's not really anything I would say that actually is any good, because for anyone that's used Exact when they were over here in the UK, pretty poor experience, pretty poor product, quite complex, and didn't really deliver for me.
Yeah, I think pretty poor is quite a hot, damning statement there, John. It fitted a niche. So Exact, if you're heavy on inventory and manufacturing, it's a good fit.
Have they pulled out of any other countries?
Not that I know of in Europe.
It's interesting. What are the alternatives that people would then use?
Twinfield, I think, is used over in Europe, possibly France.
Yeah, there's, what's the product called? There's quite a big product that Dex integrate into over there. It's got a strange name. I'll have to Google it. Can't remember.
Well, whilst John looks into that, another QuickBooks announcement, and by all means, we're not avoiding talking about you, Xero. We know you've got a lot going on with reporting at the moment, so we'll leave you to that. And whilst others are releasing some other things, so the QuickBooks Workforce app, which was released over in the US, is now available in Canada, the UK, and Australia. And it's a relatively straightforward release. It brings together QuickBooks Time and QuickBooks Payroll elements into one single app for employees to access. Brings together those timesheets, the ability to clock in, clock out, submit and track both sick days, holidays, and time, approving time and those other elements for a workflow, and be able to switch between job codes. It also has GPS-based time tracking and the ability to view all of your payslip information. So similar to the Xero Me app, but the QuickBooks Workforce app has brought that in for elements of QuickBooks.
I've remembered it. It's called Penny Lane, which is, you got to remember Beatles, then it all makes sense. That's the biggest French SaaS product over there at the moment.
It's just pulled out because of like adoption, a lack of adoption.
They just didn't have a good enough song to back up the name of the brand over there. If they'd rebranded to that, it would have been brilliant.
I don't know why QuickBooks have decided to withdraw. It must be a lack of penetration, mustn't it? That can only be the reason for it. But you've also got products like Visma, which is obviously very big. Think HG Capital type, crazy big. They have quite a lot of presence over there as well, but probably at quite a larger end of the market. But anyway, that's enough about continental Europe. Bright made an announcement at the beginning of July, so a little while ago now. And they have announced the release of a brand new cloud proposal tool called Bright Propose. So well done to the marketing teams with their creative names there. And I'm going to be like incredibly negative about this because, you know, the reason that...
That's not like you, is it, John?
I'm just saying is that I do not understand why the suites, and I'm going to name and shame Iris and CCH, although I think CCH have stopped developing theirs for the time being, have been trying to replicate products like GoProposal and Ignition and some of the others that are out there in the marketplace that in the context of what we're talking about with Approval Max, an expertly delivered app that does one thing really well. And what the suites are trying to do is replicate the success of those products, but without making the same level of investment, the same level of dedication to the products and to the product features and to the usability. And what they're really trying to do is just tie you into a single suite. Now, Bright are owned by HG, and obviously there's a whole backstory there with that. But I fundamentally do not understand why suites are investing what is an incredible amount of money, time, and effort into replicating products that are already existing on the market, which they will not do better than what's already on the market. Whereas what they could be doing is spending that money on their products that they've already got and making them suitable for the market. Because after all, Bright had a very embarrassing pullback on their payroll product, which launched on the cloud earlier this year and then had to be withdrawn because they hadn't put sufficient time and investment and effort into that product. And yet they've managed to find that they could build Propose alongside everything else that they're doing. So I just think it's bad management of resources, frankly. And I think it's poor strategic choices.
But just out of curiosity, what's in it?
That you can do proposals. That's what's in it. It's got a pricing calculator. You can effectively deliver that out through the accounting manager integration so that you can send that out for approval and for discussion. And off the back of that, you can then trigger, obviously, the onboarding process. But you can already do that with the products that are out there in the market. They've got really good APIs. You could build directly into those products and have the same or equivalent product, or if not better, a product, and just have a more seamless experience without having something that's probably going to be a little bit half-assed, if I'm
perfectly
honest.
Yeah, but if you're introducing more APIs and more connections, you're introducing risk, you're introducing maybe a deviation from your core strategy. There's also like GDPR implications. There's, you know, maybe that's something that for this type of feature is easier to just build your own thing inside your application.
That may be the case, but it's really easy to build lots of things, but to build them really well, that's the challenge. And effectively, Bright have built this as a standalone product, so you can go and buy that direct from them, as well as having that integration with Accountancy Manager. As far as I'm concerned, that's no different from getting GoProposal and integrating it with Accountancy Manager.
Or
if you're talking about risks.
Have they managed to at least get BTC to cloud?
It's still coming. But again, that goes back to my point, isn't it? Is what are they doing when, in terms of managing resources and time and effort effectively? What are they prioritizing? Is a proposal system a priority for a suite? Absolutely not. Is it something that allows you to tie people in, the customers, into a product and to a wider suite? Potentially, yes, if you're not willing to integrate with best of breed products. Is it a good strategy? Fundamentally, I don't think it is.
Okay, John's run is over.
And final bit of news, an announcement from FYI that they've tightened up their collaboration, or their integration rather, with SharePoint. It's a slightly odd announcement, this, because I always thought that FYI was quite well integrated with SharePoint, but essentially what it appears that they're trying to rebuild is the collaboration side of the product. So that's effectively like the sharing of information and the portal side of the product, which they've built more features and more capability with that connection to SharePoint in. So that just enhances FYI's appeal to the mid-size firms that are going to be built sitting in a SharePoint environment. And again, for me, sounds like they're listening to their customers in terms of what product features they really want and demand from them.
Oh, it's me. Yay. I'm stealing something from John's book for once and talking about open banking, which I'm sure that he's going to cut me off any moment. My mid-semi-small rant is that the government, gov.uk, is exploring the integration of open banking within gov.uk Pay Later. It's a rant because with the amount of things I have to pay on gov.uk, just please make it easier for me. I give up, okay? Driver's license, tax, blah, blah, blah. But just to have my bank account details, take it from my salary, just stop issuing me fines for paying late, okay? I didn't know it was late. Anyway, aside from the rant, gov.uk Pay already supports payment options such as Apple Pay and Google Pay. And the current platform has introduced recurring card payment as a feature in collaboration with Kent County Council. And they're looking to expand that functionality to other public services. But they are looking at an implementation of open banking, which will offer individuals the convenience of utilizing their personal banking apps for streamlined service payments. And I can't wait, because that would at least make everyone's life a little bit easier and be a good step forward for what is quite otherwise. I think gov.uk is a decent platform. It would just be much better if you could be a bit more intuitive with the payment experience. Having said that, the latest report by UK Finance has said that even though the UK is leading the open banking infrastructure, there's 1 million open banking payments a month and an increasing number of merchants. John, do you know how many merchants?
How many merchants there are? Banking?
What's the latest figures that you've heard?
You know what? I don't know, because there was quite a lot of discussion about e-commerce websites using open banking as a payment solution and whether or not that was effective. Personally, I don't think it is, because I don't think we're used to paying for our shopping by bank transfer, frankly, and we're much more accustomed to using Buy Now, Pay Later or credit card, debit card, and that's a much more seamless experience compared to an open banking purchasing route where you've obviously got a few steps to go through. I think what we've seen with the open banking sort of leaders in our market go cardless, amongst others, is that, you know, Stripe, yeah, they're trying to offer a banking as a business kind of platform now in terms of having a tech platform that they can offer to existing banks and to challengers in the marketplace. We still haven't really seen a huge amount of stuff on variable recurring payments, which is obviously next level direct debits effectively. And I think there's much more to come on that. I had a conversation with another accountant a few weeks ago about whether VRPs are available for accountancy firms to use. And I'm not aware of a solution in the marketplace yet that enables firms to do that, which is bonkers really, isn't it? When you think that accountancy firms love that kind of recurring payment model and being able to sign up a client on day one and take a payment on day one, rather than having to wait a few days, which you currently have to do with direct debit, for example, would make a lot of sense.
Interesting. I also heard what you said on Xero and reporting. I like the fact that Xero understand that they have got some catch up to do. And so I'm quite excited to see what they're going to release in the course of the next year. I'll say that. And the other thing that I like about Xero is they're doing a lot more with the UK Select Committees when it comes to understanding the payment difficulties that most SMEs are facing and the delay in those. So they're calling out to quite a few different accountants and SMEs at the moment to join them in presenting evidence to the Select Committee to look at this space of payments as well. So let's wait and see. It's not just reporting.
Sage have been quite busy in that space as well, and the small business payments, haven't they? Because I know that they were down in, I think it was either 10 Downing Street or number 11. Fairly recently, and did something around the payment space. It's good to see that other vendors are getting in on the act, as it were, and maybe if I was being a little bit critical, maybe Sage just jumping on the bandwagon, which Xero have already created, but actually collectively to see vendors, including people like Reagent and others, trying to figure out what the solution to this problem is, I think is a good thing.
And just before we sign off then, Accounting House Mafia, for all of those that will be around, it's Thursday, the 24th of August, we will be there in full force, and we look forward to seeing any one of you who is also joining.
This week, we are joined by Damon Anderson from Employment Hero, our series sponsor present, and you don't know anything about, Damon's come across to Employment Hero from zero, but I'm not going to give any more of an intro into that because I want to hear from the man himself. So Damon, firstly, thank you for coming on the pod. And if you can give a little bit of info for our listeners about your background, that'd be great.
Thanks, Ryan. So yeah, great to be here. So yeah, I'm the new managing director at Employment Hero for the UK business. A bit about background, I spent most of my career in the payments industry from Amex, Visa, Worldpay. I did a good chunk of my time at Xero. There's a huge amount of, I guess, transferable skills from Xero. Employment Hero is an Aussie business. Xero was a Kiwi business that was looking to grow significantly in the UK. And I spent 5 years at Xero. Absolutely loved it. Brilliant company. And a number of different roles that finished up as the regional COO. And I took an opportunity to move from the passenger seat to the driver's seat at Employment Hero. And very excited to be here now.
Damon, then from payments to payroll, and that's quite an interesting leap that you saw then Xero weren't so involved in payments. Have you been able to bring more of your payment background to what you're now doing in Employment Hero?
Xero did make a huge number of developments in payments with account payable. So that was a big part of the change introduced Xero Pay, which was actually powered by Wise. Look, when it comes to payments with inside Employment Hero, I think there is a real opportunity. If you think about paying people and actually money going into your account, one of the first places that, and 33 million people in the UK are paid by an employer. So their funds are paid by payroll into a bank account. And so actually, you have that money at the point of transaction in the payroll process going somewhere. And actually, if you look at some of the products that we have when we think about swag money, so that is a product that is available to employees where they can actually divert their money into a swag money account and use that to spend money, earn rewards, earn benefits, cash back, discounts, that sort of thing. Really interesting when you think about like kind of the payments ecosystem and actually at the point of entry, that is payroll, before it goes onto a bank account, before it goes into a credit card or downstream. So there's an incredible number of opportunities when you think about the employer and employment relationship and getting that money to them, getting them paid when they've earned it. So rather than the traditional wait for a month in arrears to get paid, getting paid straight away and being able to use that and actually making payments through that product, I think is super interesting. So I think there are a lot of things in my background that kind of feel really appropriate for Employment Hero, whether it was starting out in health insurance and employee benefits, payments, the accountants and bookkeepers and our channels of distribution with outsourced payroll, a ton of opportunities. And I'll be able to hopefully leverage my experience from not just Xero, but the guys before that.
That sounds really interesting. Why pick Employment Hero? What was it about Employment Hero that made you want to jump in and I guess take the steering wheel?
Yeah, it is like a bit of a club for post Xero because it's such an amazing company to be a part of. And life after Xero is really tough, finding the right thing. And so I did a few things after Xero. I did a bit of advisory. I spent some time at Experian, but I couldn't put my finger on what it was that I was really looking for. And actually took that time to wait for just that sort of serendipity moment where the right thing comes along. And Employment Hero basically got contacted by an ex-colleague from Xero who had moved to Employment Hero in Australia. And it's a people-centered business. It's all about people. It's all about like a focus on culture, a big purpose, huge ambition. Most importantly, just a huge opportunity to disrupt part of the industry that has been long-suffering old technology, so HR and payroll software to begin with, but we've got much bigger ambitions.
It's good that a software that's focused on payroll and HR is a people business, because you'd be really concerned if it wasn't, wouldn't you? But the Employment Hero brand is probably not one that's massively known in the UK, and I know that recently it's come about from a bit of a merger. Do you want to talk a little bit about where Employment Hero, the brand, has come from and what maybe we would know of in the UK before that?
Yeah, Employment Hero's been going for a while in Australia. So its roots are Australia and primarily it is really HR software for small to medium-sized businesses. But I think a few years ago, Employment Hero made an acquisition of KeePay, which was probably a bit more well-known, KeePay being online payroll software. With that, actually, also that acquisition brought across PensionSync, which a lot of people who have been in the payroll space will know PensionSync. And so wrapped up that together to give us really the jumping off point, which is online HR and online payroll together as one integrated cloud-based system. And that's really fundamentally what Employment Hero is today. And so it offers all of the capabilities of being able to find people, being able to recruit people, so application tracking, all that sort of stuff. Onboarding, so streamlined onboarding, employee engagement, all the things you expect from an HR system. But with that added piece now, being able to pay people on time and accurately using the kind of key pay position. So as you say, it's a big brand down under, but a new brand in the UK. And one of the big elements that we've just recently launched in the UK is the Swag app, which is effectively our employee app. So that's the app that is available to anyone, regardless of whether they work for an Employment Hero business or not, to be able to access and drive a lot of their kind of understanding of their pay slip, their historical kind of like HR records. So having an app to be able to do that, we think is pretty cool. So yeah, small brand at the moment, but expect to see a big push in the UK as it's an important market for us.
And I think if you're going to name an app for UK accountants or that UK accountants might interact with, Swag, they're going to really get impassioned about it. We love a bit of swag over here in the UK. But no, as you said, like KeePay is a well-known brand over in the UK for cloud-based payroll. It's a very powerful one, great APIs. I believe that, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Damon, but I believe that KeePay integrated with Employment Hero before the acquisition came about. And yep. So they've been working together for quite a while. It's really kind of exciting to see where that's going. And I know that something that I've been passionate about for more than 5 years now is that the power of HR through to payroll, through to finance, and the data security that comes with that. So it'd be really interesting to learn a bit more over the course of the next few sessions. I might be silly here, but why can't dogs have ice cream?
Why do they need it?
I'm not saying
why do they need it. When did, was it like Scooby-Doo or something? You say, hey, Rory, can I have some ice cream?
My dog loves ice cream.
One of their five a day?
When I was younger, I used to eat dog snacks at times. And that doesn't mean I had a deprived upbringing. It was just this odd, like little Bonio dog snack that I, for some reason, when I was, I don't know, maybe 9 or 10, loved the taste of and would eat now and again. I'm that weird person.
Are you allowed to eat that sort of stuff?
No one stopped me.
Were you pregnant at the time? Is that what it is?
As a 9-year-old boy, was I pregnant? Luckily not.
It's a bit harsh. If you're feeling a bit blocked up, do you go for those charcoal biscuits occasionally?
Maybe I need one of them now. Does it sort the nose out as well?
It unblocks everything.
Free flowing from every orifice. Jesus.
And now for a spotlight feature on something that's been quite topical across LinkedIn and with my very esteemed colleagues. It's a discussion and a debate on pricing. And in the yellow corner, we have a very bright, sparky bumblebee in the form of John Toon today, who we're very intrigued about this as the news has just come out. And so we didn't want to cover it just in App News alone without evaluating, because obviously there are two sides to this story in terms of price changes that have taken effect by Dext and by Xero and perhaps possibly by Sage, although we don't know what those prices are. I personally am for it because inflation, and also there's been a lot of changes in how the techs have evolved and worked with accounting practices over the last decade. So it makes sense that any revenue model is reevaluated in line with the market that it is in today. So John, do you want to kick off? Tell us what you know. Tell us what you don't know as well.
What don't I know? Lots. What do I know? Very little. But I guess from our point of view, the Dext price rises, which is probably the most topical one for us, is actually a bit of a win, because our overall price that we're paying at the moment is going to come down, and we're going to be priced on a per client basis, which is how we always preferred to be priced, because we have some very high volume processes that meant that using other products like AutoEntry and others that priced us on the volume of invoices and transactions processed meant that it was unaffordable for us. And yeah, I guess I understand that from talking to other firms, other accountants, other bookkeepers and stuff, that their prices are going to be going up as a consequence of these changes from DEX. But I would like caveat that by saying that certainly some of those have been on very preferential pricing deals, probably because of their early involvement with DEX and their early support of DEX in the receipt bank days. But price rises for accounting software for SaaS products of any description really are inevitable. And as you alluded to, Indy, part of that is inflation. You can't ignore that. But also part of it is hopefully going to be reinvestment in the product. And I guess that's the key thing for us as users is that you don't mind a price rise coming in so long as what you're seeing is continued investment in the product, continued development of the product. And I guess the challenge from a user point of view is that sometimes that investment can be made into things that are invisible to you as a user, because it could be into the underlying infrastructure of the system. It could be into how the databases are structured, how the system is being operated, where it's been hosted, for example, most of which may have little to no impact on you from a usability point of view. I guess that's probably the challenge, isn't it? Is how do the software houses articulate this as a challenge, and why are they making these changes? Yeah, we've seen this with Xero. We're talking about Xero price rises. Xero have made lots of changes, got rid of the old blue reports and got rid of some of the older features of Xero. And we've talked about this in the past in terms of they are changing the underlying infrastructure of Xero to make it more user-friendly and usable for the future. But in the process of doing that, are taking away things that some of their users value very highly.
Ryan, I don't know if you're as old as I am. We're obviously younger than John, clearly. Anyway,
clearly.
The point is that when I first got my O2 SIM, I was offered an unlimited text message package. And it was the envy of all of my friends, because back then you had those packages that only allowed you to do 20 texts a day or something ridiculous. Anyway, Dext, I've obviously had a change of heart in that as well. And I was gutted when I lost it, but I also thought it was completely reasonable because the market had moved on. What is your view and what have you heard?
Firstly, I'm concerned if you're being charged per text message nowadays, and I don't think anyone's.
Those were the good old days, right?
Oh, but you miss those days where we're charged per text message. So people just switch to WhatsApp, wouldn't they? And other communication systems that are out there. Firstly, I can't believe you didn't come up with a nickname for me. We've got Bumblebee over here for John Toon.
Princess.
Princess. Oh, thank you. Yes, that's much better.
Mommy's little soldier.
Thank God I mentioned it. So there's a couple of things here, isn't there? Firstly, the Dext and Xero /Sage price changes are completely different. Xero and Sage have been a price increase. They've stayed with the same model, whereas Dext have changed the model. And I think there's some frustration on the Xero and Sage side with the value of the jump up in certain areas. So if we take Xero as an example. Two tiers went up about 7%, which is probably, you can argue, inflation. And one tier, the foreign exchange one, the premium one, went up a lot more. And I think the frustration there would be what additional value has been added there. There's no additional value in the premium that's been given. So why has it gone up more? There's a lack of appreciation, I think, for what they're getting. There's no value for money there. The DEX side is, yeah, as John said, a complete change in policy, and it's how long that they've left it to change that policy that's causing the problem. Because you've got some people that have been on ancient subscriptions that have had quite a significant change. What the policy is that they've changed it to, which is a price per license tiered based on the volume you've got, makes complete sense, matches the market, is consistent. Although when they announced it, they did not announce it with transparency of what that was, and they had to quickly release something a day after the announcement because people were still frustrated. There was no visibility there. But once they had put that out there, it was very clear of what the charge is going to be based on. And I think the frustration is that for some of those, like you said, that were on that all you can eat package, what's come out has actually been a significant price jump. And I can understand why that would hurt.
I think the challenge for DEX, as you mentioned, Ryan, is that they have chopped and changed their pricing structures so many times. This isn't the first time we're talking about Dext and their pricing structure and their pricing strategy, because I think it was this time last year or maybe 2 years ago, I can't remember exactly when they said, oh, we're getting rid of all the old deals and we're having a consistent new pricing that's rebadged and remodeled. And stuff.
They threatened it, didn't they? They threatened to do it, John. And then everyone threw their toys out the pram and they got scared and didn't do it. And so what they've done now is at least they've, I think it's they've stuck to their guns this time. They said, we're doing it. It's going to be standard across everyone. And you already appreciate that they've stuck to it. I'm not sure how they've done it and how they communicate it was effective, but they've not backed down this time.
But they've got their new CEO, and I think he needs to be effective. And so if the revenue model is one of the first mandates that the CEO needs to look at, it makes sense that he has then made the changes that they were flagging from the previous year and brought it up in line with market standards. I think that is his background, actually, from some of the things that he's worked on before.
This is not unusual for SaaS businesses. You and I both know, Ryan, from the work that we do with the Early Adopters Hub, it's like pricing is one of the areas that early stage SaaS businesses really struggle with in terms of how should they price it, how do they demonstrate value for money, etc. I guess it's not unsurprising for Dext to have got to a place where they do have different deals for different people, different structures and things. And maybe there's been an element of a lack of control over that. We don't know because we've not been on the inside. But it's not unusual, again, for SaaS businesses to have to rebase what their pricing structure should look like after a period of time. And I understand that's frustrating, particularly if you're on a very good deal and you've got lots of incentive because maybe you were an early adopter or maybe you were very proactive in the early days in helping that product to develop and move on. The flip side argument of that is that are you still helping to develop that product and move it on? Are you still creating the same value for money that you were maybe 10 years ago when the product launched and helping to increase the level of sales, increase the level of awareness about the products, improve the general product features? I guess that for every influencer or whatever that was involved in those early days, their value creation for Dex or for anyone else is going to be pretty low compared to what it was a good few years ago.
They've benefited now. They've had the benefit. Exactly. The value-based pricing kicks in once you are in your cookie-cutter mode. Who are the market alternatives now that really outperform Dext on their core products or Xero on their core products who have a better pricing strategy? There's very few to name. So now it makes sense that they would reap the benefits of that value-based pricing in order for them to even make the next steps of their software development lifecycle. They need to recoup that cash from somewhere.
It's risk assessment, isn't it, really? In the end, it comes down to how many clients do they think they'll lose if they change this pricing structure? And would that loss be, I guess, low enough for them to accept it for the long-term gain of a strategy that enables them to grow more and, as you say, invest back in the product? And I think the assessment must have been done and gone, I think we can take this risk because where else are they going to go? Like you say, who are the competitors out there that the pricing is now noticeably less that they would leave Dex and move somewhere else, including the pain that it takes to transition. Now, there are people in the marketplace and they've become very loud over the last 2 weeks. I've not seen them talk as much as they have done over the last 2 weeks. They've jumped on that and done it very effectively. But not that long ago, we did a price comparison. There wasn't much out in the marketplace we could transition to. And our Dex pricing has gone down. So there's probably others out there that where their pricing's gone up, they're going to have even less that they could consider moving to.
So why aren't you being noisy and saying your pricing has gone down?
It's not that I hate it or like it. I do think, why was I being overcharged for so long, whereas all these other people were being undercharged? They've had a benefit for a much longer period, whereas we haven't. We've been paying more. And so
it's because they were influencers.
Oh, thank you, Indy. I'm taking that dig.
I'm not taking a dig at you. I'm saying that was it because they were deemed as influential, which...
Influence is the wrong term here, isn't it? It's early adopters. They might not have told anyone they're on Dex, but they helped the product get to a certain size. So they were those initial customers. They took the gamble on that product. The product's now huge and they've reaped the benefits of that lower pricing. So they could look at it going, oh, now we're penalized because the pricing's going up. They could go, we have, as I think you said earlier, we have benefited from a reduced pricing model for so long. We knew it would change. They threatened it a year ago and they didn't do it. We knew it would go up. Now we just have to suck it up or move. And they could move. There's nothing stopping them moving apart from the pain of moving. They'd have to deal with that.
And I completely agree with that. The OCR landscape has never had more products in it. And we've talked at length about the number of products that are out there and the fact that we've seen some come and go, like Lipio and others. So yeah, if you're hacked off with your pricing, like Ryan says, go find a different product, go and move to it. Yes, it's going to be a bit painful, but the reality is in the cloud world, the pain of moving between products is so low nowadays. It's just a matter of getting on with it and dealing with the transition. But it's not like the bad old days of moving from an on-prem solution to another on-prem solution where you spend 12 months looking at your data and arsing about with it.
I disagree with that, John. I don't think the pain is if you're an individual business transitioning. I think the pain is where you look at and you've got 100 clients that you've really struggled to get to use OCR systems and you're like, God, I have to move them onto another OCR system now. It's the pain of the mass, not the individual.
But you'll have chosen that OCR system at the point in time, not because of the price, but because of the features that it offered to you and to your clients to utilize. And so if it suddenly come down to price being a problem, then it's tough, isn't it? And I find it a little bit difficult anyway when we're talking about these things. You mentioned that both of us, both of our firms, we're finding that our debt prices are coming down. I was happy with the price I was paid before because as far as I was concerned, it was value for money. The fact that it's coming down is great. That's a bonus to us. But ultimately, it makes no odds because we recharge 90% of our costs because we don't do that much outsource work. So we don't absorb many of those costs for the internal work that we utilize those tools for. And that investment in that piece of software saves us time where we are doing outsource work and it saves our clients time where we're doing outsource work. And we recharge it at cost. So for our clients, it's a bonus as well because we're not going to get anything out of it. We're not going to increase our margin. We're just going to pass on a lower cost in the future. And we've got much more clarity about what happens when we scale up and add more clients in the future. We know exactly what that price was because we didn't know what that was historically.
I think that's a key point, isn't it? It's not that the software increased their price. It's that the billing model that the business has selected was to absorb the cost. And now the cost has increased. And how do they have that communication with the clients that actually we need to now pass that on? We used to absorb the cost and we changed probably, I don't know, 2-3 years ago to recharge on at software prices because we saw that actually prices were increasing. It's harder to have those conversations if you're just saying we're doing it. I think that's bit. It's actually triggering a whole new pricing structure model for the accountants where they had absorbed it previously.
But and that's a different thing, isn't it? Is it if you've absorbed the cost and effectively just bundled it in with everything that you do, why aren't accountants increasing their costs by 5-10%? Themselves. We're going through inflationary pressures. Staff costs are going up. Technology costs are going up. Operating costs of being in business are going up. I don't see how this is really a problem in the context of the fact that accounting firms should be putting their prices up. And if that's in the same sort of ballpark that the software vendors are doing, then so be it. Accounting firms should be putting their prices up every year if inflation's going up every year. And if it's not, then they should be reflecting that as well and dealing with that, which we have done in the past. Go back to the crash and we had prices of accountancy costs coming down because there was pressure on fees. But now we should be going up. We should be going up because costs are going up across the board. And we should be, if we're running businesses properly, passing on those costs.
In conclusion, do you think that they should increase their prices? They should have increased their prices?
I think what Dex have done is created clarity. Although I think I say that, but then I'm going to caveat that massively because already talking between other accountancy firms and other bookkeepers, we know that even though what they're trying to achieve is clarity, is that there are still deals being done where people are still getting preferential pricing within this model.
If you get preferential pricing, because for whatever reason, say, for example, with some of the early adopters or anything where you're getting it because of who you are, do you have to now declare that?
To our clients.
John has to declare it.
To HMRC or to clients. Because where is the line here that if you are a firm getting preferential rates because of the status of who you are or individuals are, at what point is that considered something that needs to be declared?
At the moment, the rules are that you don't have to talk about it at all. And interestingly, we started to have this debate within one of the early adopters groups in terms of whether or not that should happen. It's happening in Australia. So the Australian Chartered Accountants bodies over there have basically said that the margins you make on software is akin to a referral fee. So you now have to disclose that or discontinue making a margin.
But that's only if you're charging it onto your clients more than you're suffering the cost.
Yeah.
If you are getting a preferential rate from the software vendor, but you're still just passing it on to the client at cost, there's no need to disclose.
That's fine, isn't it? Because there's no benefit to anyone other than you and your clients. So your clients are benefiting from you being an influencer or having a better preferential rate with the supplier because you can negotiate or because you were in early or whatever. You know, and that's a unique selling point. Or being in that position, isn't it? Is that you can offer your clients better rates as a consequence. But the counter argument to that is we make these choices and we might buy bulk licenses and suffer the cost for a period of time before we sell them all. So what? You might sign up a deal with an IFA to pay an exorbitant amount of referral fees for the first 6 referrals before it drops down to get a volume. That's no different in my opinion. So I would support the ICAW, the ACCA getting involved and actually saying to accountants, you've got to make it really clear about what you're doing in terms of passing on pricing. Personally, we've always passed on prices. We've always passed on our cost prices. So whatever discount we get from various people is passed on to our clients because we've always thought that they make a choice buying their software direct through us because we do get preferential treatment because we get partner discounts and whatever. And if they didn't, they would suffer a higher cost by going direct. And see, that's the way it works.
So we're similar, but we do an admin fee, basically a processing fee because we're having to handle their invoicing. And normally they're benefiting from a slight delay in paying that because of the delay in us doing our invoicing. So they're getting a discount lesser, like an admin fee, which we disclose to them, this full awareness there of what's going on. But I guess I just want to clarify, because I'm not sure if you answered the question or not. So you think that Dext on Xero should have increased their pricing?
It's not a matter of should. It's a matter of...
Get off the fence, John. Come on. Should I just state my opinion?
It's their choice. So like Xero increased their prices. That was inevitable. We knew it was going to happen. They've consistently over the last few years been increasing their prices every year, pretty much across the board. You tend to see, it tends to be marked out pretty quickly because you tend to see increases in Australia before they come to the UK and things. If you look at the percentage increases, yes, they're wildly different between the various products. The reality is of the 3 products that they sell, because ignore Ultimate because nobody buys that, Premium is the top product that can be most afforded by the largest businesses. And so they can afford the largest increase percentage too. The Sage increases have gone up by 12% for the Sage Accountants Network. I don't even know what that is. I don't really care. I don't buy that product. And so it's completely irrelevant. But their pricing for products is extortionate anyway. So why expect anything less?
In conclusion.
Prices are inevitable.
I made mistakes by asking it in an open-ended way. It's a yes or a no.
Should I just jump in and save poor John here? It's completely understandable Xero's price increase. I don't think it's justified for the premium side. I know they can do it, but you need something more value there for the size of the jump. The Dex side, they should have just restructured it when they originally said they were going to do it 1 to 2 years ago. Rather than delay it, it's creating more pain. If they're once again going away from their price structure and securing deals with clients, that is a huge no. They should not have backed down. If they're backed down that quickly, in my opinion, they are completely wrong with that. If you're going to do this, you stand by it. You stand by it strongly. But let's add some value here. If you are frustrated with Dex, it's worth looking at others that are out there. It doesn't mean it's better. I still think Dex has probably the best UX in the OCR tech system for expenses. I'm sure that's an opinion rather than a statement. But you've got Auto Entry out there that is really good, has some better features in certain areas compared to Dex. You've got SE Bills or Easy Bills out there that the UX isn't that great, but the price point is really low. You've got Data Molino out there that's always been there. It's been there from the start in the background, but doesn't really market. Many aren't aware of that out there. But you've also got Sahara in the marketplace as well, that has a system that accountants can use that has an interesting pricing model, may work out better for some accountants. So there are competitors out there. Go out, find out what's the best fit for you. And if you don't like it, it's probably John's fault anyway.
Very true. My tactical framework is something that I learned from giving birth that I think that everyone will benefit from hearing this. So the framework is brain, right? You've got, so it's easy to remember, right? Use your brain to make informed choices. What are the benefits of making the decision to change? What are the risks involved? What are the alternatives out there? Thank you, Ryan, for a few. And then use your intuition. What does my gut say to do? And then ask yourself, what if we do nothing and wait it out? On that one, AI is fast coming up the track. So I'm pretty sure there's going to be some really nifty alternatives within the next year or two to put some of these big players into them into the kick
grass.
Them into action, to kick them into action, speed up the software development life cycles and see the value that you want to get from some of the big software. So anyway, that's how we'll end it on use your brain.
I was really worried that you, when you started saying, I was worried about brain when I was giving birth. I was like, is that because you're worried about the evolutionary process of human beings having such big heads and it's going to split me in half?
That's no, all.
Do we stop the recording while we talk about Indy's private parts, or is this going to be going the outtakes?
If you subscribe to my OnlyFans channel, you will see all the details. Until then,
you'll be able to see how the brain affects.
Let's move on to the next part of the show.
Hopefully by now, at the end of the episode, Ryan's testicles have defrosted a little bit after he's had them dipped in peanut butter ice cream. And just a quick reminder to anyone that's not aware, particularly vendors in the market, that the Digital Disruptors brand that we've been working on will be launching imminently. If you want to get on board, we would love to have you involved, participate in this movement that we're trying to create and to build more awareness of what's good and great in the accounting tech space. But yeah, keep an eye out for those announcements. Get in touch if you're interested. That'd be really wonderful. And there you go. That kind of wraps up our latest episode. It's great to be back, finally back. And look, send us a review. Tell us if what's good, what's bad. Let us know if the banter's still up to spec or not. And if you think that Indy's looking a little bit old in the video, then we'll touch that up and make sure she's looking more polished next time.
I don't know why you're talking about Indy. That's not good.
Cut before she comes in, all right?
Don't cut before Indy comes in. If you have feedback about John and Ryan's general physical appearance, feel free to contribute those remarks as well. We'll do my best to sort that as well.
It's simple. There's nothing else to say.
You just basically put my head in an egg.
Tattooed hair. There is all sorts of remedies for this.
Who's saying that I haven't got some tattooed hair?
You can go for the Wayne Rooney. Turkish.
I don't know why you're picking on Ryan. You should remember that there's two of you, okay?
It's the speed of John's receding that I've noticed since the last time we recorded.
It's going well, isn't it? This is, it's not even real. This is like an avatar.